The aim of Black Mental Matters is to tell experiences with honesty. Therefore, some discussions may trigger an adverse reaction. If a discussion is beginning to upset you, we advise that you please stop listening and talk to your support team.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. It's Black Mental Matters. I'm Vince the Voice. Makeba Reed Johnson will be joining us again soon. Keep her and her family in your thoughts and prayers. Would you do that for me? And you're in ours. I hope all is going well during this pandemic, during the protests, all this stuff. And I tell you, you know, as these demonstrations continue to simmer, you talk to the young folks, the millennials, the Generation Z, the activists, they ain't playing. But the thing is, I wanted to find out, you know, how are they doing? What are they planning? What is it that they really want? As DMX would say, what you really want? I want to find out. And thus, I reached out to a gentleman that has worked with these young people and is on the front lines himself with the protesters. And so again, what they really want, that's what we're going to find out today. It's Black Mental Matters. Thank you so much. Mr. Clifton Crowley is a therapeutic support specialist for the Georgia Department of Family and Children's Services. He works with the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. He works with the NAACP. He works with youth. He is a therapist. He is on the line. How you doing, Brother Clifton?
Hey, good. How you doing? Thank you, sir. How are you?
Oh, man, awesome. Welcome to Black Mental Matters, man. And let me just first say you doing okay? Everybody on your end all right?
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
I'm
doing great.
Yeah, I asked that, you know, because even though, and we're going to talk about, you know, today, this protest and this movement that's going all around the world here with Black Lives Matter, but we still got this pandemic going on, too. So yeah. I always ask that, you know, because families are going through that. So Clifton, again, thank you for being with us, man. Just to give us started here, tell us a little bit about your background, if you would, please.
Well, I'm a social worker by trade. I work with children mostly. I have done therapy for children. I'm a licensed social worker, so let me make sure I back up with that, because I have to make sure I say I'm licensed.
That's right. Otherwise, you're just a life coach.
So I'm actually a licensed social worker. So I'm a licensed master of social worker, LMSW, a graduate of Morehouse College, and I got my master's at Clark Atlanta University in social work. After retaining my license, I was hired by the Department of Family Children's. Well, I worked at DFACS before I was licensed. Then I worked for the state of Georgia now as a licensed clinician for the state of Georgia for the Department of Family and Children's Services. Prior to that, I worked for Fulton County as a DFACS case manager for CPS, which is the investigative side for Department of Family and Children's Services. I worked the night unit, which was 12 to 8 a.m. Mm. And so I did a lot of the more immediate cases in the night unit. I've worked with children for a while. I've done mentorship with started a mentor program with my friend who's the head. Jamar Logan, he started a mentor program called Yes Mentors, which is youth empowerment and stability. We did that at in Pittsburgh community near the Turner Field. That was a really eye-opening experience working with the youth as a mentor. I've also mentored with Big Brothers and Big Sisters.
I don't know when you sleep. That's all I'm going to say.
So I do a lot of community work. Just a lot of community work. And I'm probably going to do some more. Also start an initiative called Black Men Vote, which is to try to increase awareness for Black men as to their voting power.
Yes.
Why they should vote and what it means for them to vote and to be educated. And not just voting, but civics in general, because it's very important that we're educated as to what these civic functions are that we're voting for and who are the people that we are supposed to be representing us. So that's a very big function of voting is.
You're covering a lot of ground. And I tell you what, if we had a couple more Cliff Crawleys out here. It would be awesome. And shout out also to the life coaches. I didn't mean to down them, you know, the good thing, but it is a difference. But it is a difference. And so, you know, wanted to talk to you today because you have been participating with the protests that have been going on regarding, well, it started, you know, as a result of this last, this straw, the George Floyd murder there in Minneapolis. I mean, the straw that broke the back, and working with young people. And that's what I want to find out today, Cliff, is, you know, what of the mindset of our young people as they're pursuing. Well, first of all, what is it, George, that you George Clifton, that you hear that they that they are pursuing with the protests that are taking place?
Well, it's various voices. I can't say that there's just one specific thing. They all have different themes. One of the overall overarching voices is that they're demanding structural change, not just pacification or patting the back or patting the head and we're going to give you a little this or that. They want to see it a complete structural change on what is going on.
But what does that mean? What does that look like? Is that we're changing laws? Does that mean there's more resources? I mean, what does that mean, structural change?
I'll give you an example. Within the movement, there's a new kind of hashtag or push called defund the police or defund police. And I'm gonna be honest, I'm a part of that as well. And it's not about just giving us, we're going to give police more training or we're going to do the what they normally say, community policing. This is an approach in which we're saying, no, this is not just something where you put a black face on an oppressor's mechanism designed to enforce enslavement. We want to see an entire cleaning house of the entire approach to policing in general. I don't even like to call it policing anymore. I don't want to even call it that. I want to call it public safety because I don't feel that police necessarily create an environment of safety, or do they police reduce crime? Where the normal, what functions as something that crime, what produces crime is poverty, joblessness, low education, and hopelessness. That is the true indicators of crime, when you have a large number of low-skilled and impoverished people in a community in a controlled environment, that creates a level of crime. Well, we're not going towards the root of fixing that. We're not doing preventative measures. We're not putting any support for these communities.
That's right.
We're only criminalizing these people.
That's right.
Which is our people. We're criminalizing them back into an enslavement system, which is the prison industrial complex. And because of that, we're just basically, what this country has done is taken slavery, changed it over with the black codes, enslaved them into concentration camps where they're doing chain gangs for workers like Vanderbilt building railroads. And then they die on these chain gangs. Well, then that changes to Jim Crow, where they're enslaving black people into a system where, you know, you don't have this level of power. So we're going to strip you away and enslave you again into concentration camps of imprisonment. Then it turns to the war on drugs. Now it's turned mass incarceration. And so it's just a consistent change of enslavement that have gone on within our community, whether it be in cages, in prison, or even on the street when they put in a little code on your foot, and now you can't move around in certain areas.
So, that's what it is. Do you find the young people that you work with? I mean, are they looking into the history, or are they? You know, I could see people just being upset during this time because we've been locked in the house for 3 months. You know, and I can see folks just wanting something.
A lot of rage.
Yeah, a lot of rage pent up. Or have our young people really, you know, took a look to see what the what brought us to this point? Are they searching for that knowledge as well?
Again, I can't speak for all young folks, but I can say that there are a lot of educated minds out there that are speaking out and have spoken out and are willing to speak out. as far as what they've seen systematically, what the institution has looked like historically, and what they want to see in the future as far as real change. And they're demanding that change now, not later. They want it now, and I agree with them. That I'm tired of waiting for your 14-day plan. I want to hear, what are you going to do today to create a solution? And right now, that's what we're trying to emphasize. And if that means staying on the, keeping the pressure on all the way throughout the summer to the rest of the year, or however that looks, not stopping. And the civil rights movement took well into 2 to 3 decades of evolution from W.E. Du Bois to Dr. King. We can't microwave change. Change has to be ongoing and keep forcing the system to either change or we destroy it. Which one?
You know, it's ironic or coincidental, but no, because we try to be topical here. My last guest was one of your colleagues, the justice fighter, you know, Gerald Griggs.
Gerald,
and it just happened, just so happened again. You know, shout out to my partner, who's you know, family, and our condolences go out to her family right now. So I needed to find some, and I saw Gerald that morning, and it just struck me. I said, man, I got to call this brother right now. And so we talked, and part of the thing that came out, and we know this as historians, black history, or knowing black history, is that, you know, John Lewis was what, 13, 14 years old. You know, Martin Luther King was 20 something, you know, all these are leaders. And even though John Lewis was 13, I just saw him, you know, standing in the middle of the Black Lives Matter there in front of the White House here. The fight for him still goes on. And John Lewis is what, 70s?
Yeah, and he's fighting cancer.
And so he's fighting cancer, yes.
So
the point is, yeah, you're young. Yeah. You know, they started when they were young, Clifford.
Yes, they did. And many of the kids that are out there now are very young. I've seen people that are in high school, all the way up. I've seen one person yesterday. I was at a rally in downtown Decatur. Shouts out to Muwala Davis, who put on the rally.
Yes.
Beacon Hill Black Alliance, I believe that's what they're called. And their protest rally out in Decatur, they had an eighth grader from Grady Height, from that area, speaking, and she was very eloquent and she was very passionate, and she seemed very knowledgeable about what she was conveying to the crowd. And she was speaking to a crowd of almost 5,000 people.
Wow.
And she didn't have any, you know, hesitation to say, yo, we need change today. I'm tired of talking to my family and my little brother saying what you cannot do with your white friends.
Wow.
And that's an eighth grader.
We're talking about things because we're here in the Atlanta market, but these protests and demonstrations, I mean, they are literally taking place all over the world. And I mean, my hat and my pocket, my whatever, is goes out to you. Thank you for what you're doing. This is Black Mental Matters, and one of the things that concerns me when things happen, the fire flew under me. My folks are from Louisiana, and when Katrina hit, and nobody helped the folks, you know, and left them on the bridge, and, you know, bodies flowed down the street, and it was just a tragedy all the way around. But no one, and you as a therapist, no one talked about the psychological damage or psychological help or assistance that would be needed from people going through things like that. And so this, I mean, we're watching this video twice a day. Then we see in more videos, and then we, you know, we see in ourselves, you know, face to face. We see the president sick, the army on us. I mean, psychologically, man, what can first just give me some thoughts as you think what it's doing to our mental health right now.
The consistent viewing of Black deaths and murder has been going on for a while now. That leaves a certain level of trauma to anyone, particularly to us as a people, when we are constantly seeing ourselves being victimized, you know, and constantly seeing ourselves being brutalized. And in some ways, it gives us this idea that we can't not fight back. And but one of the things that this recent event, the recent event has occurred, is that we're standing up and saying, no, we can fight back. Mm-hmm. And the anger and the resolve that I'm seeing out of these young people is pretty impressive.
It is.
What I would say is that what this can lead to is a certain sense of depression, hopelessness, anxiety. Some people can even break down. I saw this in the last movement, even just 4 years ago with Eric Garner and with Trayvon Martin and Mike Brown, when we were doing the protest rallies and for Philando Castile and Sandra Bland. You know, once that was over and the movement kind of died down, that energy wasn't there for the people that were part of the protest. A lot of them suffered greatly from anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder, even. Mm. Being a part of that movement, being in there, getting tear gas, getting, you know, arrested, getting, you know, accosted by police. Mm. But once that energy is gone and you're left with just the images and the memories, some people didn't cope well with that. So it's important that we find coping mechanisms to embrace and find self-care that we can utilize throughout this process. And don't be hesitant to seek professional help through a therapist, through a clinician that can help guide you through this process and guide you through the trauma and guide you through the anxiety that you might be feeling and suffering during these moments.
Again, we're talking to Brother Clifton Crawley, call him Cliff. He's a therapeutic support specialist with the Georgia Department of Family and Children's Services, licensed social worker, works with the great Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, great children's hospital here, on a board of the Atlanta NAACP, and I could go on and on to the break of dawn. I'm looking at some pictures right here on your Facebook page. You were out in Gwinnett County. And I love this. I see the pictures. When you see Asians for Black Lives and, you know, things like that, I know. And a lot of, again, young people, our young people are coming together. Is it real? Am I dreaming when I see them like this? Or is this real, Cliff?
It can be real. Okay. If we stay focused and we keep the energy going and we keep building the solidarity. Obviously there's been conflict between and this crowd was, let's be honest, was mostly Korean because it's in Duluth and that's pretty much Korean, you know, population in Duluth.
Yes.
There's been conflict between Koreans and the Black community. Yes. And this is going on for a very long time.
Yeah.
If you look at those photos, there's a guy that's there. He's 92 years old. He was involved in the LA uprising.
I see him. I see him right in the middle with his walker. I see him right now. Yes.
And he spoke in Korean to the crowd and he could not stop crying.
Wow.
I don't know what transpired in 92 with him, but I believe from what I understand, his store was burned. One of the stores that was burned down in the LA uprising.
Wow.
But he spoke and he couldn't control his emotions during the protest. And at the end of the protest, he asked for Shala Tilson's mother to come up. And Shala Tilson is a young brother that was killed in Rockdale County. He spent 9 days in isolation for a mental health breakdown.
Mm.
And the sheriff's department did not bring him to a hospital. They took him to jail, beat him, didn't feed him, and kept him in isolation. He died of dehydration. So basically he was tortured to death.
Yes, I remember this. Yes, yes, yes.
And
so the store owner from the Korean gentleman asked the mom to come up. And
they, they embraced.
Wow.
And they couldn't, and there was a huge amount of emotion and tears involved in that.
Yeah.
And because I know that this 92-year-old man who witnessed the LA riots, whose store burned down, experienced trauma himself. And I'm sure that there's things that went on during the LA riots that he don't want to even talk about.
Yes.
And for this older gentleman to humble himself to speak at a rally for Black Lives.
Yes.
Speaks volumes to what is this movement and what this movement could potentially be if we were to stay and keep this energy going. Because this is just, now let me make this point clear. I think one of the things that we think about when we say the Black Lives Matter movement, I'm not the biggest fan of the name or the hashtag, by the way.
Okay. It starts a discussion for sure, and arguments and feelings,
But not because I find it like, I don't know, All Lives Matter to it. That's not it at all. I just find the title of it to be kind of like a submissive title, like Black Lives Matter too, as opposed to Kwame Ture, who spoke of Black Power.
Yes.
And gave it a much more physical and forceful designation as opposed to this. But let me get back. This is a movement not just about Black lives, it's about power structure.
Yes.
And it's about white imperialism controlling the narrative around the world and pushing for white imperialism and white empowerment and the protection of that white empowerment on people across the planet. That's why you see uprisings in other countries, because what W. Du Bois spoke of when he spoke of the abolition democracy, abolitionist democracy, is that white imperialism hurts them too.
Right.
In the long term, because it keeps the people that are in power, and it keeps other working class, lower class, et cetera, in position to where they'll never get to that power, because the power structure doesn't want to share the power. They want to control the masses. This movement speaks more to say, and what I'm saying is that the movement is also about, we demand our power back, and we see what's going on, and the frustration is there, not just within Black communities, it's within communities across the world. They're tired.
Yes.
And that's what's resonating with everyone on the planet, is that we see the power structure. We see what white imperialism is and what it's doing, because white imperialism has separated Korea. White imperialism colonized China. White imperialism colonized India. White imperialism colonized, brutalized, raped Africa. White imperialism enslaved African people here in this in the Americas, and built those civilized those countries, Brussels, London, France,
on the backs
of African people and people in general. So this is something to say, we're tired of this, and we're going to take this over and burn it down if necessary. Mm-hmm. And that's what this movement is about. And
wow.
Black Lives Matter is about that totality of it.
Wow. Wow. That's and I think that I've been guilty, you know, that you have your friends out there that, you know, they want to say something, like you say, I don't like the name or whatever, you know, and you get into this petty argument. I got to the point where I don't want to have to school every white friend or whatever nationality friend as to why folks are upset and to why it's not just about this thing right here, or just this football player doing this, or just this one. No, it is a culmination of not only these faces and these names that we're saying, but this thing goes back to the beginning of this country, the beginning. and to see my Asian brother. I'm enamored to the Asian community. Cliff, I just tell you, out of the top 25, they made me number 26. Man, I got an award and everything. You know? So I have a close affinity with the Asian community, just because, hey, it's a big world out here, and when I see these young people, you know, I have sons, and they went to school, you know, and it was very diverse. When I see these young people, you know, getting together and doing things and changing the world, which they are literally doing right now. So for our parents out here, Cliff, now you're out there with these young people. I mean, what should our parents be telling? This was a traumatic year for a lot of young folks. They couldn't graduate. They couldn't go to the prom. They was locked up in the house for 3 months. It may have been up in the house with daddy, who daddy boy is crazy in a mug, like, you know, or mama crazy in a mug, or my brother. And you know, so as we move forward in this movement, how can our parents support these young people? Because they're not going to stop. I don't think they're going to stop. How can our parents what advice would you give to our families out there during this time, man? I know that's a broad stroke.
I can only speak for if I had children, what I would do. Mm-hmm. I would support them. Okay. I would plan with them. I would march with them. Mm-hmm. And I would speak my mind and my peace and offer the simple wisdom that I could offer in the times, in these times, in these moments. I make sure that my family is safe. We get tested for COVID consistently. Mm. We practice proper social distancing and mask up. But at the same time, we're also going to, you know, we'll put together the banners, we'll put together the posters, we'll get out in the streets together, we'll talk about it and express openly how we feel about what's going on, because that is going to be key, is the communication. And one of the more important things, allow our young people to express themselves and to be heard.
Yes.
And to allow them to talk, you know, and be open and honest about how they feel in this moment, you know, whatever that comes out may be, you know, be accepting of it. Yes. And not try to poo-poo or control what they think, but listen to them, accept it, and work with them and show them, you know, be a guide. Mm-hmm. And that's I think the most important thing a parent can do. And of course, you know, as a spiritual, you know, you want to pray and meditate and do those things together. And that is, I think those are the keys to what a parent should do for their children.
I saw a number of you know, getting through social media posts of people who said, hey, I got the kids up this morning and I told them, come on, we're going downtown. And, you know, thank God we had our initial clashes here in Atlanta. But for the most part, for the past 5-6 nights at least, maybe even more, things have been very peaceful and very orderly. And I'm sure that the children whose parents brought them out, you know, as a family, they really got something powerful out of that experience.
Yeah, I was there the night that the uprising started. I was able, you know, to witness the initial spark of the protest that led to the violence from that night. I posted about it. The energy was just a different kind of energy.
Yeah.
It wasn't
our energy. It wasn't. This, yeah, I know what you mean.
It wasn't just, because I think I made a post about it, that it would seem like an Afro-punk, anarchist, Antifa, led
mosh pit. slamming people.
I did, but at the same time, you know, that could also be a function of just some generational gaps in looking at things. The the kids had a different energy. And yes, there were some kids of different ethnic and racial backgrounds that did initiate a lot of the damage and destruction. But again, that goes back to what I said earlier, that people are tired of the power structure that is currently in place, being in place. When you have less than 1% of the global population controlling over 95% of the wealth, and hoarding it, and not sharing, and in some places people live in poverty, and it, you know, many of us, you know, I have three jobs, you know what I'm saying, right. trying to come up, right. So it's like, right. You know, we talk, and a level of frustration, you know, we talk with that level of frustration where they just expressing that frustration openly. Mm. And so I don't have an issue with the destruction. That's property to me. That is buildings. That's brick and mortar. My issue is that, you know, as long as people didn't get hurt, and people, for all that went on, I don't think there was any incident where someone was killed. Mm. You know, ultimately that means more to me that the fact that no life was lost means way more to me than a Gucci bag that was stolen out of Phipps Plaza. Yeah. So that's
this Clifton Crawley, ladies and gentlemen. Again, it's you know, working with our young people and doing so much in the community. Therapeutic support specialist, licensed social worker, and on the front lines here helping us figure out what our young people really want. And Cliff, I just want to thank you, man, and give you strength, get you some sleep sometime, but stay on that front line for me, man, and I'll be right behind you, okay?
All right, no problem. Thank you.
God bless. Yes.